Support for the Think Podcast comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering courses in art, literature, film, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. You can register online now for the upcoming fall programs at smu.edu/CAPE.
In 2009, a troubling epidemic took hold among students who'd attended Palo Alto's Henry M. Gunn High School. Within 6 months, five very bright young people were dead, not of a bacterial or a viral infection or even a rash of accidents. This was an outbreak of suicides. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We don't often think about catching emotions, but it's not just impressionable teenagers who are susceptible. Pretty much all of us are influenced by the moods and ideas of those around us, and the effects can shape what we learn, what we believe in, what we aspire to do, and whether we succeed or fail when we try. So how could this possibly work? Lee Daniel Kravitz is a journalist with a master's degree in counseling psychology. He explores these questions in his book Strange Contagion, Inside the Surprising Science of Infectious Behaviors and Viral Emotions and What They Tell Us About Ourselves. He joins us this hour from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Lee, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me on.
So you had just moved to Palo Alto at the start of this wave of suicides. Who was the first person to die?
Yeah, so there was a young man who, he was a 16-year-old young man, and he had, you know, good grades, he was well-loved, he had a pretty girlfriend, all signs where he was doing really, really well. And when he was dropped off at school one day, he just decided to take a walk, and he walked 2 miles down the road. And there was a train track that goes by the school. It actually goes all the way throughout Silicon Valley, up and down the coast. And he walked onto the train tracks right as the train hit. And he was the first who died. And, you know, that was a very shocking experience. I think my wife and I had lived in the area for about 2 weeks. And we lived right down the road from the tracks. And when this happened, you know, I mean, when something this tragic happens, obviously it gives everybody pause. You know, my wife was we were about to have our first child. And, you know, it makes you think as a parent, you know, what the parents must be going through when something like this happens. But then it happened again about 3 weeks later. Another student, this one, a graduating senior, her name was Sonia Raymaker, decided to do the exact same thing. And that's when things started to get a little bit, even more concerning, because we start worrying about copycats and you start worrying about, well, what do we do if another one happens? And of course it did.
You know, that phrase copycat, or that word, is interesting because it's used to describe people who harm themselves or somebody else in imitation of another previous act. It seems to imply that the followers are just kind of weak-willed in some way, but you discovered it's vastly more complicated than that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, I mean, it seemed to me, I mean, I was getting my master's in psychology at the time, and I'm a science writer, and it just, something doesn't compute when you start to think about, well, is it somebody who's weak-willed, or is there something else going on here? And I started looking into something called emotional contagions or social contagions. That's what they're commonly known as. It turns out that thoughts, behaviors, and emotions are highly, highly contagious. And we catch these things all the time. You know, you walk down the street, you catch a tune in your head and you start feeling happy. You catch someone drinking a cup of coffee out of the corner of your eye, and all of a sudden you start really wanting a cup of coffee. Or even more interesting, you see somebody drinking coffee and you start waking up. So those sorts of contagions are really, really common. But what was happening here in Palo Alto, the heart of Silicon Valley, was that there was a perfect storm of kind of harmful social, emotional, and behavioral contagions that kind of came together, and some people started, you know, pushing them to these really scary extremes.
What kind of place is Gunn High School, the school that all of these young people who died by suicide had in common?
Wow. Yeah. So Gunn High School, it's a public school. You know, it's in the heart of Silicon Valley. So a lot of the students who go there, their parents, they are, you know, they work in tech or they work at Stanford University, which is literally just a couple miles down the road. You can actually see it from almost, you know, any place in Palo Alto. But, you know, a lot of parents either work there or teach there. A lot of parents work at Google, Facebook, you know, all the big tech companies are all there. And what's remarkable about Gunn High is that for a public school, it feels like you're in a private school. Everybody there is incredibly kind and warm and wonderful. It feels like this really generous community. But also everybody there is ranked number, I think, 4 or 5, depending on the year, top public high schools in the country at any given time. And so the students are very bright. Many of them take multiple AP courses. What really stands out is that most of these kids go on to four-year colleges. You know, a very, very high percentage of them go to four-year colleges. Some of them even go on to Ivy Leagues. A very high percentage of them go to Ivy Leagues. And so they're very driven. And so on the surface, you might think, well, maybe it's that these kids are just so driven that they're you know, driven to dying by suicide, or at least some of them are. And to an extent, that's true, but there's a lot more going on.
The people who were affected by the deaths that had come before, I want to see how to explain this. They likely didn't see it as relevant that someone else had died. In other words, they had the sense, perhaps, that killing themselves was their own idea. Can you talk a little bit about how that's possible?
Yeah, it's this really interesting thing. Well, the first thing that stood out for me was that many of these students really didn't know each other. They weren't peers. It wasn't like this was you know, like a pact or anything like that. What winds up happening, I wound up visiting a professor at NYU, and he runs a lab called the Motivation Lab, and he talks about primes. His name is Goldweiser, Dr. Goldweiser, and what Peter Goldweiser talks about is how there's cues in the environment. Basically signs, colors, smells, tastes, textures, all these sorts of things are all around us. And as long as we kind of have in our minds, you know, a predisposition for certain feelings, behaviors, and thoughts, some of these things can really cue us or prime us to do certain things. And in some ways, even if we didn't know these students who had died, if you start to see people acting or behaving in a certain way, then it can kind of activate in us certain thoughts, behaviors, and emotions as well. And in some ways, that sort of happened with these students. You know, I want to kind of preface this by saying that most, I should say, well, 100% of suicide begins with mental illness. So it's almost like you need to have that bedrock of some sort of mental illness. And we're not talking extreme mental illness. We're talking like depression or anxiety. You know, some of the students who wound up dying had, you know, early signs of schizophrenia and things like that. But for the first, you know, 4 or 5, 6, 7 who wound up dying, you know, it really was, you know, it started with this bedrock of depression. And then on top of that, all these other things start coming in. So, you know, there's contagions like fear, which is a self-fulfilling prophecy, hysteria. If you start to believe that there's something wrong with your environment, then you might take on some of these, you know, kind of behaviors or emotions. Stress becomes a gateway to other contagious emotions. Even, you know, extreme work ethic. All of these things start to kind of pile on. And then we have a recipe for, you know, what wound up happening at Gunn High.
Lee, what is the evolutionary benefit of this response that we seem to have to other people's behaviors and emotions? Why are we susceptible to catching behavior?
Oh, it's such a great question. Well, you know, there's the whole idea of crowdthink, that we can't know everything ourselves. So in many ways, you know, Silicon Valley's really kind of gotten into this whole idea of, in general, you know, the whole idea of a crowd think, where we beta test products and we put them out there in the world so that everyone else can tell us what's right and what's wrong with it, and we can kind of tweak it based on the group knowledge around us. And in many ways, that serves us really well as humans too. We can't know everything. So in, you know, knowing the environment, in tuning the environment, picking things up, and, you know, that helps us, you know, avoid pratfalls. It helps us learn. You know, there's actual studies that show that if you walk into a large lecture hall, for instance, and you, you know, kind of observe how other people are learning in a lecture, we actually gain in intelligence as well. We learn how to think clearer, how to think differently, how to use different types of language. And that all serves us, you know, in how we learn and how we communicate and how we excel in life. And that's one of the wonderful things about living in a community and why it's so important to have, you know, a very strong community around you, because, you know, we don't just learn directly, we actually learn indirectly as well.
So what's the mechanism by which these things spread? So if I have a cold and I touch my nose and then I shake your hand and then you touch your nose, chances are 3 days later you get sick. How does it work with emotions and ideas?
So there are a couple of things that happen. So biologically we have mirror neurons. So right now I'm going to try a little experiment. I'm going to yawn into my microphone right now.
Okay.
And everyone who's listening, odds are you have this impulse to yawn. Part of that is you know, our mirror neurons in our minds actually start to activate, and we start to take on other people's behaviors and emotions, and sometimes even our thoughts as well. So it's that, and as I mentioned before, primes or cues in the environment that Peter Goldweitzer over at the Motivation Lab at NYU talks about, where if we see a color red, for instance, on a wall, that can actually cue us to feel courage or to be brave. Or we see the color blue, it can calm us down. And these sorts of things are kind of built into our wiring, and they just naturally start to make us behave and pick up cues. It's a really wonderful thing. But on a biological level, that's really what's happening. It's our mirror neurons firing.
So is there a biological basis, even if it's something that we want to fight, is there a biological basis to stigma? You know, so often people who are not okay mentally are really shunned by the broader society.
Right. So one of the things I'm not sure I can answer that question directly, but I can talk about, you know, the importance of avoiding stigma. Mm-hmm. There's specifically, you know, when Silicon Valley started experiencing these suicides, and there've been nine so far, nine over the course of four and a half years, there was a reluctance to talk about what was happening. And what that does is, you know, there's this fear that if we talk about it, it will spread. And the problem with not talking about it is that it does spread a stigma. And the truth is, you know, look, 3% of the population, of teenagers in particular, will have suicidal thinking. It just happens.
Wow.
And that rate hasn't changed so much, but the rate of completion, people who are actually attempting to die by suicide, is on the rise. And in order to stop that, we as a community, or as a global community, a national community, even our, you know, local communities need to talk about this and not be afraid that talking about it will spread it, because it doesn't. What it really does is it spreads the idea that, look, if you're hurting, find help.
My guest is journalist Lee Daniel Kravitz. We're talking about his new book, Strange Contagion, Inside the Surprising Science of Infectious Behaviors and Viral Emotions and What They Tell Us About Ourselves. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Support for the Think Podcast comes from the SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening doctoral program where you can distinguish yourself personally and professionally. More at smu.edu/DLS.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Lee Daniel Kravitz about his new book, Strange Contagion, Inside the Surprising Science of Infectious Behaviors and Viral Emotions and What They Tell Us About Ourselves. You can join us by sending a tweet to us at KERA Think, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. Lee, how might this phenomenon relate to the existence of local cultures? By and large, we think of, you know, Canadians as polite, Midwesterners as taciturn, Californians as laid back, New Yorkers as brusque. Did we maybe just catch these behaviors from our neighbors?
Well, there's a lot of science that shows that, yeah, that's absolutely true. What's a little shocking, though, is that what started out as these kind of community behaviors or cultures, these are spreading. So I go back to Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is known for being highly ambitious, full of really ambitious people, innovative people, with really strong work ethic. In Silicon Valley, we have heroes, you know, our Silicon Valley tech heroes like Mark Zuckerberg and Steve Jobs and, all the founders of these wonderful kind of, startups but what winds up happening is there's kind of a double-edged sword. So work ethic, there's a strong work ethic. That's wonderful. But if, you're working 70, 80, 90-hour work weeks, that can be problematic. And that actually trickles down from employees down to their families and to their kids, and that enters the schools. Ambition in general is a fantastic thing. In Silicon Valley, we kind of have a premium on that. But the problem with that is that, the science shows that really ambitious people, and ambition, again, is a good thing, really ambitious people have a really hard time with failure. And that can lead to real depression. And again, Silicon Valley, we talk about, it's a lot of money. There's a lot of money in the community. The smallest houses in Palo Alto start at about $2 million. And these are fixer-uppers. And so you're wandering down the street and you're looking at these little homes, and all of a sudden you realize if you want to live here, you need to make that much money. And greed becomes really pervasive, and that spreads like wildfire. And so, okay, so in this community, you've got all of these things kind of swirling around, and that can lead to, in this case, it can lead to good things, but also can lead to some very scary things like suicide or depression or anxiety or, things of that nature. And, what I thought was an isolated thing is actually we see it everywhere. It's in Austin, Texas. It's in Boston, Massachusetts. It's spreading outside of Silicon Valley. It's in San Francisco. You follow, go up and down the coast. It's L.A. And you realize that what used to be these isolated sort of community characteristics are spreading really, really fast.
You discovered that we become greedier literally just by studying how the economy works.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. So I went to Wharton and visited Adam Grant. He's a professor there. And, we were just talking about social contagions and we were going back and forth. And he said, Lee, one of the really interesting and kind of scary things is that, look, we all learn about economics. When we're in high school, we take an economics course. In college, we take Econ 101, and some of us take, advanced economics. But there's a lot of studies that show that if you just crack open a book on economics, all of a sudden, that makes you greedier. The information floats on the study of economics. And so are we all greedy? Because it seems like greed can affect everybody. And the truth is, yeah, because on some level, we all have the capacity for greed. We also have the capacity to catch it and to catch, kind of more toxic strains of it as well. I was really fascinated and a little scared by it, especially because, one of the characters in the book, his name is Roni Habib. He's a teacher at Gunn High, and 8 of the 9 students who died by suicide had gone through his class. And so he knew them fairly well. And what does he teach? He teaches economics. So, I asked Roni, what does that make you think or feel? And he said, it was one of the things that got him thinking about how to change the conversation. So what he does now, and it became a really popular practice, not just within his econ class, but throughout the school, is he started kind of infusing his classes with social emotional learning. And what that looks like is, okay, kids come into his class and they open their books. They're about to take an econ test. Every day before the class starts, he did 5 minutes of mindful meditation. And, you know, I rolled my eyes when he said this too, because I'm like, okay, mindful meditation, that sounds kind of froofy, but it works. He said not only did his students start to relax and relate to one another differently, they reported feeling better about themselves. And then on top of that, their grades actually got better.
Wow.
And so now, even when he's not even in the room, the class starts without him. His students kind of on their own will do 5 minutes of mindful meditation.
We have an interesting email here from Brian who asks, is it possible that high numbers of divorce in a group of friends or a community can be attributed to this phenomenon?
Gosh, that's another wonderful question. And yes, so there's a study out of Yale by Nicholas Christakis, and he talks about how divorce is contagious by a factor of three.
Wow.
In fact, it can trickle down. You know, but at the same token, happiness is also contagious and can trickle down by a factor of three also. So a happy neighbor or the next door neighbor of a next door neighbor who's happy can actually, you know, increase your level of happiness as well. But divorce is absolutely contagious. And the idea is that we start to catch the idea that we can, you know, change our situation if we're not happy in our relationship, or we start to question whether or not it's okay to have these thoughts. And if we start seeing other people do it, or even hear about other people doing it, then yeah, we can do it as well.
Tell us about the phenomenon of companionate love and how it can change the way we feel about work.
Ah, companionate love. So yes, so there's a professor named Sigal Barsad, and she's also actually out of Wharton. And what she did was she studied for 7 years. She studied a long-term nursing facility. And for 7 years, she followed the nurses on staff, the social workers on staff, the doctors who visited. And she noticed something really interesting, that in this particular facility, the people who worked there were really kind to one another. They were really nice to one another. They looked each other in the eye. They asked how they were doing. When someone was having a bad day, they gave each other a hug. They said good job to one another. And she started to notice that workplace satisfaction, which kind of makes sense, goes up. When you have an environment where people are really nice to one another, which is, you know, she calls it companionate love, which is kind of a not so much love, but kindness and goodness to one another, that workplace satisfaction goes up. Okay, well, that makes sense. But then she started noticing something really interesting, that effect started trickling down, and that the people that they were taking care of at this long-term facility were staying healthier longer. They weren't being rushed to the hospital for emergency, you know, room visits nearly as often as some of the other facilities nearby that were also in this study. People were healthier, living longer. And then on top of that, their loved ones were also feeling the effects of this. And they were judging this by the fact that, you know, they were recommending more people, more family members go to this care facility for care. And so she thought, wow, this companion and love, you know, phenomenon is really fascinating. Let's see what happens if we study this in a workplace setting like a factory or an office park or a bank or a technology, you know, organization, a startup. And you start to see that productivity goes up. You start to see that people are happier. They stick in their job longer. There's a much more sense of pride. And on some level, we know this to be true. Like, you know, inherently, yeah, you know, you're good to people. Good things happen. People want to stay. But now there's actually evidence to show that kindness, companionate love, is highly contagious. And it can ultimately, if you're just looking at the bottom line, your corporate, your bottom line, workplace bottom line will actually increase. Your turnover will decrease. And overall, it's a much better situation for everybody.
In all seriousness, could this explain what's wrong in Washington, where it seems mm-hmm. like not much is getting done and there's just so much acrimony?
Without a doubt. I mean, I've actually written a lot about this. And politics is highly contagious. spinning your wheels, highly contagious. But also, like, you know, xenophobia. Let's just, you know, talk about xenophobia. Xenophobia, fear, is highly contagious as well. You know, politics kind of trades on fear in some cases, and we see that happening quite a bit here. But on the flip side, we also see that political movements are really contagious as well. You know, the way that we rally around civil rights, women's rights, all of these things spread and they catch. And there's a reason why we're seeing such an uptick in political outrage and activism, as well as we're seeing some of the really, you know, kind of harsh, scary things coming out of Washington right now as well.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. Stephanie is calling from Dallas. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Very well, thanks.
Good.
Good, fascinating program. Firm believer of the law of attraction, which I think this ties directly to. I have someone in my life and just wanted to help them figure out a way to combat the contagious feeling that they feel in lots of different scenarios, you know, from, you know, someone sick next to me and all of a sudden they start assuming those, you know, symptoms or you know, literally like voice changes, morphing into another person kind of thing. How do you help someone like that?
Wow. Well, Stephanie, thanks for calling. You know, without, you know, going into any sort of diagnosis, I mean, it's, you know, assuming somebody else's characteristics and things like that, I can tell you awareness is really the key. So there's social emotional learning and emotional awareness. You know, emotions in general are highly, highly contagious, the good and the bad. And one of the ways to just to learn about the contagions we're taking on, as well as the contagions that we're spreading, is to learn about, okay, well, like labeling and naming what these feelings are. So I always bring it back to Gunn High School here in Palo Alto, which is having, you know, the suicide clusters, which is fairly extreme. If we start teaching the students and even the teachers that tightness that we feel in our chest, we label that. We say that is anxiety. Or that feeling where, you know, you're anxious, you're sweating, or you're not eating or you're not sleeping. That could be depression. Basically, learning to label these emotions becomes the first way to kind of combat some of these contagions. And we run into a lot of resistance, especially within, you know, education programs in general, because we don't like to talk about our feelings. There's some stigma attached to that. In some of these, you know, high functioning schools where, you know, academics take precedent over everything else, some of these kids don't even know what emotions really are. You know, at Gunn High School, one of the things that's saving these students right now is teaching them that, you know, these things that you're feeling are, you know, anxiety, stress, depression, even trauma. And once you identify that, you can actually, one, in yourself say, I'm feeling these things, and then I'm going to get some help. Or two, you can recognize those things in other people, which is almost as important, if not as important in many cases. And you can direct those people to get help through the wellness center, to reach out to social workers or psychotherapists, and breaking that stigma. So the really the key there is learning the language of emotion.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Lee Daniel Kravitz. He's a journalist who also has a master's degree in counseling psychology. His new book is called Strange Contagion: Inside the Surprising Science of Infectious Behaviors and Viral Emotions and What They Tell Us About Ourselves. Let's go back to the phones now. This time, Scott is calling from Irving. Hi, Scott.
Hey. Hi.
Hi.
My question is, yeah, you're, I'm not even writing a book, by the way, but you're, the idea of kind of like group behavior and, you know, doing what everybody else is doing. So that's what happened in Nazi Germany. Everyone just kind of stood by and watched Hitler do his thing. What are your comments about that?
Yeah, thanks, Scott, for calling. So, yeah, there's this, I call it toxic group think. And absolutely, we see that happen. We see, you know, political revolutions kind of, you know, for good or for ill, happen in this way as well. There was, you know, it's fascinating. I found a couple of studies on this. There's a guy named Dr. Riddle, R-I-R-Y-D-L, and Rydell, and he focused on, there was a summer camp in one scenario, and one kid stands up and throws a plate. It's a food fight. And all of a sudden, the entire room starts to get into this giant food fight. And, you know, most of the kids didn't even know who really started it, but they just started doing it. And then there was another example of, you know, there was a gym in New York that happened a couple of years ago where, you know, these business people were in there just talking, and one guy gets up and throws a punch at another guy, and then the entire room starts fighting. And it seemed like something out of a movie. But the truth is, we start getting primed and activated and triggered, and these things become very, very toxic very fast. And in Nazi Germany, what really wound up happening was you had a closed society where certain types of thoughts, behaviors, and emotions, which most of us would, you know, on a basic human level, assume are, you know, antithetical to who we really are, all of a sudden they start to seem normal and right and acceptable. And in this case, over a period of years, some really toxic ideas and behaviors and thoughts started to spread, and it became, kind of national policy at some point.
But they never feel like they come from somewhere else, right? They always seem like things that we want to do in the moment.
Isn't that weird? It's true. It happens without us knowing it. That's kind of the scary thing. These thoughts that we pick up, these feelings, these behaviors, they feel like they're ours. They're intrinsically ours. We actually adapt them and adopt them. They become part of us, and we never know that we've actually picked these up from other people.
My guest is journalist Lee Daniel Kravitz, author of Strange Contagion, Inside the Surprising Science of Infectious Behaviors and Viral Emotions and What They Tell Us About Ourselves. You can join this conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372, email think@kera.org, or find us on Twitter. We're at @KERAThink.
Support for the Think Podcast comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening master's program for working professionals. You can apply now for the fall of 2017. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Lee Daniel Kravitz, author of Strange Contagion, Inside the Surprising Science of Infectious Behaviors and Viral Emotions and What They Tell Us About Ourselves. You can join us by emailing think@kera.org, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. Lee, I thought this was so interesting. You write, even those who are not naturally affected by stress are still susceptible to catching the emotions it produces in others. Being stressed is one thing. Having that really complex, unpleasant combination of feelings is another.
Right. Well, even more than that, I found that stress is really kind of a gateway. It's kind of a door. So, you know, okay, we're not really naturally stressed out people, but, you know, we start to experience some sort of stress. What that does is it opens the door to all kinds of other emotions, depression, fear, you know, exhaustion, and all of these sorts of things start to percolate and come together when we're stressed. And that was one of the keys, you know, specifically what was going on in Silicon Valley was that, look, everybody went once, you know, the sixth, seventh, eighth, and certainly the ninth student died. Everyone started pointing to stress must be, you know, the reason. And stress is contagious. That is true. But most of us are stressed in our lives, and that doesn't mean that we're going to go and do something, you know, like harm ourselves. So what's really going on? So what it really comes down to is that stress is kind of it creates an opportunity for us to feel a bunch of other emotions. And some people who already have, you know, are predisposed to depression or high anxiety, all of a sudden these other emotions start crashing in. And for some people, they pile on and they can lead to some pretty scary things.
All right, I want to talk about the effect of media. We can watch a movie or a TV show and feel the emotions of the characters there. Can those affect us as profoundly as a real story within our own community?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, there's loads of evidence to show that, you know, what we see and hear really do affect us because, you know, we all, you know, have kind of in our minds this idea of, you know, yeah, I'm watching somebody fall in love on screen. I've fallen in love before. I know what that's like. I have the capacity to fall in love. I'm there too. And in some ways, that's the magic of media. You know, when we are playing video games and we start, you know, one character beats up other characters, there's a sense of catharsis. We've all been there because we all have the capacity to feel, you know, those sorts of emotions. But and that helps for obviously for very good things as well. Happiness, you know, is very contagious because when we're watching like a show on Broadway or on television that makes us feel happy, it's musical, people are dancing and laughing, you watch a Disney movie. Yeah, we start to pick up that happiness, and that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But there's also the flip side. In Vienna, back in the 1980s, there was a case where a guy was going to work, and he decided one morning to walk in front of the subway, and he got hit and died. And for the next couple of months, almost on a daily basis, people were doing the same thing. Hmm. And they figured out, the Annenberg Public Policy, School for Public Policy, figured out that every time there was someone who died by suicide, the newspaper, the top headline above the fold would say another suicide in big letters. And it became kind of, you know, this kind of big deal and very splashy. And they realized, well, let's see what happens if we take that off the front page and we remove the word suicide from the headline and we put the story in the back pages and we don't make it sensationalized at all. And we put a suicide hotline at the bottom. Let's see what happens. And so they tried this for a month and the rate of suicide dropped by 80%. So we start to notice that these sorts of things are, you know, spreadable by what we see and hear in the media. And, you know, another great example of that is how bulimia actually spread. And it's time and time again, we've shown that, you know, eating disorders, in particular bulimia, spreads by how we see and hear people talk about weight loss. And even the name itself, bulimia, can spread the act itself.
All right. What about social media? Because maybe it depends on my mood. Sometimes I can see pictures of everybody else, you know, getting brand new cars and going on vacation. And it does make me feel really happy for them. And sometimes it makes me look around and just feel really dissatisfied with my day.
Never believe what you see on social media ever. No, that is true. What's interesting is, okay. So again, it's another double-edged sword. Let me back up by saying, look, Facebook and Twitter both did studies that show that if we're on Facebook or Twitter and we see a tweet or a post that goes up that's a happy post, the odds are, even without us recognizing it, our next post is going to be a happy post or a positive post. And if there's a negative post, then the odds are our next post will also be kind of a negative post as well. And they've shown this. But so you can see how emotions are highly contagious on social media. But they've also shown that certainly in cases like suicide or in mental illness and things like that, people express themselves a lot easier sometimes on social media and people can help them. And you get this kind of group hug on social media as well. So it can kind of mitigate some of these factors at the same time, which is kind of a good thing because there's really no way to really regulate social media at all. It used to be that when, you know, these kids at Gunn were dying, there would be these big displays of like support, big, you know, kind of memorials and things like that. And at some point, psychologists showed up on campus and said, guys, stop doing this because you risk memorializing them and making them these people who died into heroes. And some other kids might start to mimic and mirror what's happening. So you can kind of mitigate that. But then all these memorials started moving online and you can't really stop that.
So in other words, even if the school says, let's not do a big ceremony for fear of, for lack of a better word, glamorizing this act, kids are going to get together and have these discussions privately online.
They are. And, you know, on the one hand, it can be dangerous because, you know, it does, in some cases, can spread the idea of suicide or even, you know, the emotions of depression and things like that. But on the other hand, it can be a really great kind of interrupter to the point where, like, even Facebook and Twitter, I know for sure Facebook and certainly Google, when you start typing in words like suicide or, you know, depression, or they have these algorithms that can actually detect suicidal ideology on thinking. And I'm online, and all these sort of 1-800 numbers will pop up. You know, suicide hotlines will pop up because it acts as an interrupter to stop the flow of these dangerous contagions.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. This time, Ken is calling from Fort Worth. Hi, Ken.
Yes, about group dynamics, about the group starting the food fight. An example of that is that apparently when that starts up, there's nobody, voice of reason, somebody that says in the group, this is stupid, let's not do it. And
right,
that's what I've seen in my life, is a lot of people, a small group of people will say, let's go do something stupid, usually teenagers. And if there's one person in the group that says, no, that's a stupid idea, then the group doesn't do it.
What about that, Lee?
Yeah, so there's a couple of examples that, you know, studies that have been done that have shown that it's when somebody has a negative or someone is like a bad apple, let's say, that brings down the entire group really, really fast. And negative emotions and negative thoughts are much heavier and stickier than positive thoughts. Mm-hmm. So even if there's a group where there's one kid who stands up or one person who stands up and says, I don't know, this seems like a really bad idea, it's very, very hard to turn that boat, so to speak, before it hits. You know, it's you know, you need a kind of critical mass of people saying, no, this is a bad idea. Yeah, this is a bad idea. Yeah, this is a bad idea. And then all of a sudden things start to right. The ship starts to right itself. But that's why it becomes so difficult when you're in a workplace setting and there's one bad actor who can bring down an entire group, and that spreads exponentially. Burnout is another great example. You have one person who's burnt out, then you're going to suddenly start having a lot more people who are expressing signs of burnout. And so the real trick is to identify those people who are displaying these behaviors, get them help, and start flooding your kind of group or your community or unit with sort of positive and helpful emotional thought and behavioral contagions.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Lee Daniel Kravitz. His book is called Strange Contagion, Inside the Surprising Science of Infectious Behaviors and Viral Emotions and What They Tell Us About Ourselves. A while back, we did a show about the way people respond when there is an imminent emergency, right? Like a plane has mm-hmm. gone down and you have to get out quickly. Some people freeze, some people move. How can we be sure that we are sort of catching the right behaviors when it really counts?
Well, I don't know if there's a hard and fast rule. I mean, that's one of the problems with toxic groupthink is that, you know, it can push us in directions that are not always helpful. We'll talk about in Dallas, there was an Ebola scare. The Ebola scare really, kicked in there, I guess, a couple of years ago. There was a patient at a hospital who came in. It turns out he had Ebola. And there was an absolute, there was kind of this hysterical response where, medical workers were worried that they had caught it from the hospital and that neighbors had caught it and that there would be an Ebola, outbreak in Dallas-Fort Worth. And people were really, really scared. And the good news is that when they were scared, they sought help. On the bad news is that they were responding with, kind of extreme behaviors. And that can kind of become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and people really start catching the fear. Because if your neighbor is worried that he's going to catch Ebola, maybe I should be worried too. Rational thinking and rational thoughts and rational minds really matter. So the way to really to deal with these sorts of issues is to look at the facts, not overreact. Hopefully in that case, rational minds will prevail.
Is there evidence that we can catch somebody else's politics?
I think, you know, there have been some studies that show, like, if you're in a conservative community, you are more likely to become more conservative. If you're in a liberal community, you will be, you know, take on more liberal, you know, perspective. Some of that's kind of a self-selection, process, right? If I'm a liberal-minded person, I'm going to, you know, kind of self-select to move to liberal, kind of more liberal communities. That said, look, I lived in Berkeley for a while. I thought I was a pretty liberal person. And then all of a sudden, I'm living in Berkeley, California for 5 years. And I realized that I've become much more extreme in my politics. And then I moved to Boston for a while. And my politics started to kind of, you know, go the other direction. And I think that's probably, again, it's groupthink. Whether it's toxic groupthink, I can't say. But it certainly is you know, we can catch extremes, that's for sure.
How would you say the suicide outbreak has changed the culture of Palo Alto?
You know, in the beginning, I really worried that, and I think there's some evidence to show this is true, that there was a sense of, it's not happening here. Hmm. It's not happening here. We're going to put our heads in the ground and not talk about it. Certainly, you know, there's been three clusters of suicides at this point, which is really scary. After the first five died, there was a period of about 2 years where nothing happened, where, you know, students stopped doing this. And then it started up again, and there were four more, or three more, and then there was another one a couple years later. And what I noticed was that the community really started coming together. They started talking about it more. They started becoming what I call interrupters. They started embracing the idea that everybody needs to know the signs and warning signs of these contagious emotions and thoughts and behaviors, specifically when it comes to suicidal, you know, suicidal thinking, behaving. And now, you know, there's a real effort to kind of push these people who feel these things to get help. And Palo Alto in particular is now talking about it in a really wonderful way. Case in point, the school, Gunn High School, opened up one of the largest wellness centers on any high school campus in the country. It opened up about 2 years ago. And so you see this willingness and openness for to talk about these things. And they've had 7,000, in the first year alone, they had 7,000 individual appointments from students. And now I think there's something like 2,000 students at this school.
Wow.
So if you stop and think about it, that's amazing. What's even more amazing is they've hospitalized 4 dozen students for suicidal thinking. And that's an amazing safety net. They're really doing a great job.
Lee Daniel Kravitz is a journalist who happens to have a master's degree in counseling psychology. His new book is called Strange Contagion: Inside the Surprising Science of Infectious Behaviors and Viral Emotions and What They Tell Us About Ourselves. Lee, how interesting to talk with you. Thank you for making time for us.
It was an awesome pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is our technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. And Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.